This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Hunger is when you're not sure where your next meal is coming from. And if it persists for a long time, it is going to affect how you grow.
That was Charles Obuah, CEO of Action Against Hunger, talking about the effects of malnutrition. Also, vote counting is continuing in Mozambique from yesterday's elections. Civic organizations in Zimbabwe say human rights abuses are worsening, and people affected by the separatist conflict in Cameroon are being treated for mental trauma. We'll have those stories and more, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, today is World Food Day, which is used to heighten awareness of hunger and promote action to end malnutrition, which affects tens of millions of lives. VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with Charles Obuah, CEO of Action Against Hunger, which helps African communities detect malnutrition in children and treat it holistically with special nutrient-rich candy bar and other services. Obuah, who often knew hunger as a child in rural Ghana, began by summing up the state of hunger in the world.
It's bad. Hunger is when you're not sure where your next meal is coming from. And if it persists for a long time, it is going to affect how you grow.
You get sick.
It gets sick, especially extreme cases. You die.
I understand you've had your own experience with this.
Yes, growing up in Ghana on the farm, I experienced hunger. And most of the time, it was between the time of planting and the time of harvesting. My parents were subsistence farmers. And there were many times that I personally did not know where my next meal was going to come from.
How did that feel? I guess it would be an emotional and a physical component.
It's no good. You go to your parents, you're crying, but they say there's no food. And they themselves are struggling, and that's where it becomes so painful.
Is it physically painful?
It is physically painful because after some point in time, you may drink water, but it's not enough. The urge is there. You cannot find the food to eat, and you become weak.
So what does your organization do?
Action Against Hunger, we've been around for more than 40 years. And our sole purpose is to make sure that children do not go through these hungry moments. And so what we do is to be able to work with the community to make sure that we help them to be able to predict if their children are going to go through that period.
But don't they already know? I mean, you would think that a family member would be acutely aware of whether the kid has enough food or not.
You're right. Normally they should be able to know, but if you are in an environment where that is the norm, you get used to it. And that's where we come in, because the research is clear that children must be able to grow within a certain range at a certain time. So we come in, and then just by using a simple band, we are able to be able to tell the mother that there's a problem here and he or she needs help.
Please describe the band for us.
It's plastic, three colors, green, yellow, and red. You wrap around your upper arm. It tells you whether your child is healthy based on those colors. So if it's green, your child is healthy. If it's yellow or red, your child is malnourished. Call it nutrition thermometer.
So a mother comes to you or a chief or a health worker and says, okay, this is in the red zone. This kid is clearly malnourished. What happens next?
What we do quickly is, because the issue is a medical issue, there is food that has already been prepared called a plumpy nut. It's made up of a lot of nutrients, sugar, peanuts, biscuits, all the essential nutrients the child needs. And the kids love it, and so they would want to eat it. And within 45 days, they're already treated.
You're smiling when you say that.
I'm smiling because that small piece of food can save lives. This issue is predictable, it's preventable, and it is treatable.
Not to play devil's advocate here, but it's one thing to look around, there's no food, but I can imagine a situation where they can find out that they're malnourished, but there's no plumping at it. So it seems to me that your system requires a whole group of services, not just the knowledge of it, but the resources and, you know, the infrastructure to get the plumping nut to them. And so this wouldn't be for completely isolated children. It's for children where the resources already exist, but people are in the dark about the objective facts.
Mm-hmm. You're right. And so what we do usually is to make sure that we have the community health worker train them about all these processes. Then we show them where we can have access to this plumpy nut, work with government, because we want national governments to be the ones to be aware and to be able to help the children. Mm-hmm. So then there's a whole supply chain piece that we do to provide the plumpy nut through these community health workers to be able to help the children.
Have you already seen any concrete results from this band and the plumpy nut?
Yes. Our study is very clear. When children are diagnosed with this issue, as many as 90% of them through this treatment survive. That is very high, 90%. And then after that, you stay in their community to be able to help them so that they don't go through this again.
That was Charles Owoba, the CEO of Action Against Hunger, speaking with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York. Election officials in Mozambique are counting votes from yesterday's elections, with the final results not expected for days. The Election Commission said it won't release a partial results. The contentious balloting for president and parliament took place with only scattered incidents to mar the process, which comes after the government reached a peace deal with Renamo rebels. The ruling Frelimo party is expected to hold on to power. A forum of non-profit organizations has issued a report on Zimbabwe's human rights issues in 2018, saying the situation is getting worse. Last year included a deadly military crackdown in the capital Harare, amid allegations from the main opposition party that it was robbed of victory. The report blamed 72% of the abuses, particularly those related to corruption and civil and political rights, on the government. Reporter Kuzai Vinavashi has more details.
Zimbabwe's NGO Forum is made up of 20 non-profit organizations, including Media Institute of Southern Africa, or MISA. MISA's representative, Tabani Moyo, spoke at the launch of the report.
This report fits squarely in our effort to take stock of the human rights situation in the country. It is one of the most comprehensive processes that we have engaged in as a forum with a view of trying to take an audit.
The report was compiled with the help of member organizations involved in human rights, media freedom lobbying, women and children's rights. Musa Kika highlights some of the key issues from the report.
Corruption is also one issue that you will see highlighted in the report. We devote a chapter to the issue of governance and to the issue of the economy and how the economy has a correlation or an impact in the enjoyment of human rights in the country. So central an issue it is that last year the president instituted a special task force within his office to deal with the issue of corruption.
Kika says the most human rights violations recorded were related to civil and political rights. Zikamai Bere with the forum says the report is dedicated to the six people who died during the August 1st shootings last year after government deployed the army to deal with the rioting citizens. Pondering on recommendations and a way forward, Bere reads a statement in the report from the forum's chairperson, Justina Mukoko.
First, we call for serious, authentic, and inclusive dialogue that is not confined to political actors. And we recommend specific law reforms to remove obstacles to human rights progress in Zimbabwe.
The forum says compliance with the Constitution is needed, complemented by legal reforms and the repeal of oppressive laws. Bere says if there is a political will to follow their recommendations, Zimbabwe will be on its path to recovery. He says government and civic society groups have the burden to inform people of their rights, otherwise they are useless. The report does not include human rights violations so far this year, when about 50 civil and union leaders have been kidnapped amid allegations of government intimidation to squelch strikes and protests as the economy has spiraled downward. For VOA, this is Kudzai Shinawashe from Harare.
Cameroon's three-year separatist conflict has left close to 3,000 people dead and growing numbers in need of psychological care. An influx of people impacted by the conflict are flooding into trauma centers across the English-speaking regions of the Central African state. Medical officials say they are running short of supplies and trauma workers are struggling to provide care. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from the village of Babungo in Cameroon's English-speaking northwest region.
A middle-aged woman cries for help at the Integrated Mental Health Care Center in Babungo, a village in Cameroon's English-speaking northwest. Speaking through a translator, she tells a reporter her husband was shot dead in a crossfire between the military and separatist fighters in September. Then on Saturday, her only son's body was found in an abandoned school building in the town of Mbengui. In the same trauma center, 19-year-old Yvonne Ika says that last month, three armed men in the English-speaking town of Bamenda stopped her on the way to school and raped her.
They told me to climb on the bike. I tried resisting, but when I saw the gun, I had no option. They took me to a bush. I insisted I'm an orphan. They beat me, and I had no option. What I went through, I'm not sure I will ever want to go back there again.
As Cameroon's separatist conflict hits into a fourth year, the number of trauma victims is only growing. At the Babungo Mental Health Care Center alone, the number of patients has tripled in the past 2 months to nearly 600. Trauma care specialist Evangeline Chang says patient numbers jump when fighting stops as it becomes safer to travel to the center.
The trauma is just too much. Youths are dying, elderly people are dying. Even old mothers that cannot even run away when their guns are being shot, they are just shot like that. There are more mental cases every day because of the trauma of this crisis.
There are not enough beds, so the patients sleep on the floor in crowded hallways. Medical supplies are running short despite donations from Germany and the United States. And director of the trauma center, John Tumenta, says most staff have fled because of nearby fighting between Cameroon's military and the separatists. Earlier this month, Cameroon's government hosted a week-long national dialogue with the aim of ending the conflict. While some welcomed the effort by President Paul Biya for reconciliation, critics dismissed the dialogue as a sham debate. Separatist leaders refused to take part, noting thousands of people are still locked up in connection with the conflict and vowed to continue fighting. Meanwhile, the United Nations says the humanitarian situation in the troubled western regions is getting worse, with 500,000 internally displaced and over 1 million in need of assistance. Fighting broke out in 2016 after Cameroon's military cracked down on Anglophones, calling for an independent state within the mainly French-speaking country. Cameroon's English speakers say they are treated as second-class citizens and given fewer jobs and support from the state. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Babungo, Cameroon.
The remains of 28 of 32 Kenyans who died in the crash of Ethiopian Airlines Flight 302 in March have arrived in Nairobi. One of the families waiting for giving the remains for burial rites was that of 34-year-old Abdullah Ibrahim. Rhea Omboa reports from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
An Ethiopian Airlines plane carrying the remains of 28 of the 32 deceased Kenyans landed at the Jomo Kenyatta International Airport early Monday morning. Hearses lined up at the VIP section of the airport as family members streamed in. A somber mood engulfed the airport as victims' families, most dressed in black, anxiously waited to receive their loved ones. Among the families at the airport was that of 34-year-old Abdullahi Ibrahim, who worked for a dairy company in Saudi Arabia and was on his way home for vacation when he died in the crash. Kenya's Cabinet Secretary for Foreign Affairs, Monica Juma, was among the top government officials greeting the families.
We have had a chance to meet with the families. We've had a chance to give them a final service, interdenominational service, so that they can bring closure to 7 months of grieving, of sorrow, of sadness.
She said all the bodies of Kenyans killed in the crash have been accounted for. The 4 bodies not returned Monday were either cremated or interred privately by their families. After prayers at the airport Monday, Abdullahi's remains, plus those of the 27 others, were turned over to family members. 3 hours later, a funeral was held at Abdullahi's home in the Kibera section of Nairobi. His friends carried his casket to the Muslim cemetery as they marched the same streets where they played football as children. His clearly distraught father, Ibrahim Mohammed, said that now he could probably start to heal.
Kwa hakika, kwa hii miezi saba yote nilikuwa nimekuwa traumatized.
He says, for these 7 months, I have been traumatized. When they handed over my son's body, I was thankful and felt some relief because that's my son and I have buried him now, so I feel relieved and I believe now my health will start to improve. Imam Ahmed Idris led the prayers at Ibrahim's send-off.
Tunamshukuru Mwenyezi Mungu amejalia.
He says, we thank God that Ibrahim's remains are home and he is now buried next to his grandparents and great-great-grandparents. Now the parents can finally have peace because their son is buried here next to his family and according to what the Muslim religion dictates. A total of 157 people died when the Boeing 737 MAX aircraft crashed on March 10th in the town of Bishoftu. Last month, Boeing announced it had set up a $50 million fund to compensate victims of the crash and another one involving the 737 MAX in Indonesia last year. All 737 MAX planes remain grounded while the company investigates reports that faulty sensors were to blame for both tragedies. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi, Kenya.
Cameroon's port city of Douala, most used cooking oil from hotels and restaurants there, was once dumped down the drain where it clogged plumbing systems and caused pollution. A Cameroonian chemist decided to use his knowledge to change that practice. Moki Edwin Kinzika has this report by Anne Nzwanku in Douala, Cameroon.
Cameroonian chemist Martial Gervais Odenbella makes soap and detergents by turning a toxic ingredient ecologically friendly.
L'idée de recycler aussi des fruits usés nous est venue d'une demande d'un hôtel.
He says the idea of recycling used cooking oil came when a hotel made the request after realizing that it produced huge quantities of used oil. At the time, the used cooking oil was discharged into nature, says Odenbella. Concerned to protect the environment, he says, the hotel asked him what he could do with the used oil. Odenbella began collecting used cooking oil in 2014 to convert into cleaning products. It's now a business that produces 165 kilograms of soap and 2 tons of liquid detergent per month. Even small businesses like donut maker Adeline Monkam have joined in recycling their oil. She says in the past she used to dump the used oil, but people told her that it's polluting the environment, says Monkam, and that she can recycle it. So she doesn't dump it anymore. Environmental scientists say oil waste clogs up sewers and drains, pollutes the environment, and can harm wildlife. Recycling the oil reduces toxic pollution and creates a new and valued product, says the deputy director of Biotech's laboratory, Franz Tafongang.
Cette voie se pend est à encourager grandement.
He says this type of use is to be greatly encouraged. Used oil is primarily toxic when it is directly consumed, says Tafongang, but valued as a cosmetic, he says there is no danger. Biotech's laboratory says Douala hotels alone produce 20,000 liters of waste oil per month. Chemist Odin Bella says there is still too much cooking oil being dumped in Cameroon. The more people are trained, he says, the more people will utilize used cooking oils to make soap, and the more we will get to a level where we can really protect the environment from the harmful effects of used oils, says Odin Bella. And what better imagery for cleaning up the environment than turning pollution into soap? For Anne Zwanke in Douala, Cameroon, Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News.
The an annual hip-hop festival in Ghana is celebrating the West African country's take on the American-born music and culture. Performers use their music and art to represent culture and life in Ghana, infusing local languages, fashion, and sounds in hip-hop style. Stacey Nott reports from Accra.
Although hip-hop's roots are in the United States, today it is a global cultural movement that has fans all over Africa, including Ghana. Salam Atikpo, creative director of Yoyotins, a platform dedicated to promoting hip-hop in Africa and co-founder of the festival, says hip-hop in Ghana has grown from its early days of cassettes imported from the US to today, where artists rap in local dialects to tell their own stories.
There's been a lot of transformation, a lot of fusions, you know. Some people say Afro hip-hop, some people say Afro trap, you know. So we still get influences from the States, but also there's that side that's tried to incorporate what we have here, the culture, into the hip-hop, and so it has different forms.
The festival works to highlight not only music, but also graffiti, DJing, and dance. This year, dance was the main element highlighted, with professional dancers holding workshops and dancers battling each other to the crowd's cheers. Cameroonian professional dancer Ornella Chango has been a fan of hip-hop since she was a child. She says the local language, dance, and fashion in Ghana's hip-hop scene shows the homegrown take, but she also points to how sounds, fashion, and dance from across the continent have influenced American artists.
It takes just knowing the two cultures and knowing that, okay, this is where the African culture is and this is where the American one. So the fusion happens not only on our part, but also there, because I believe it has been sensed that both cultures are rich and brought together massive even.
Artist Kingsley Kofi Defour says hip-hop still has a lot of room to grow in Ghana, especially in the graffiti scene. He says more street art across Accra will help beautify the city, but wants more people to offer their walls to local artists.
People normally don't give us their walls when we ask them to give us their walls for free to do beautiful art on the street. But people also, some other people also kind of love it, and then they give us. So it is not too much in town, but people are getting to know the culture. So maybe probably by next year, it's going to be too much graffiti in town.
Organizers say future festivals will focus on different elements to both celebrate those in the scene and to encourage others to experience the rich homegrown hip-hop culture Ghana has to offer. Stacey Knott for VOA News, Accra.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. For all latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News, coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned for the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Tahir, and our engineer, Rob McLean, I thank you for choosing the Voice of America.